Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. It's good to be back in the country after an amazing 2 weeks in Uganda. You know, we at Wells of Life have provided water to more than 350,000 people in rural Uganda, and we've saved the lives of approximately 50,000 children under five. It's an amazing nonprofit that I'm so excited to be involved with. My only problem today, and I think partially my guest, is that we're still on Uganda time, which means our bodies think it's 2 o'clock in the morning. So I have my monster drink right here with me, and that will hopefully keep me going. Today, I am honored to have another special guest, Rand Sperry, who is CEO of Sperry Equities and Sperry Commercial. Now, here is a guy who is used to five-star hotels and roads that actually have asphalt on them, which you don't find in Uganda. Somehow, Nick Jordan, the executive director of Wells of Life, convinced Rand and his awesome daughter, Kelly, to join us on this rugged trip where the accommodations are, at best, 1.5 stars, and the highways are rugged, butt-numbing dirt roads. We were located in the most rural areas of the Kingdom of Buganda, which is in the country of Uganda. There are four kingdoms in Uganda, and Buganda is the largest and with the most people and the most territory. Before we get going with the show, I would like to give you an idea of the credentials of our exceptional guest. Rand Sperry is an exceedingly accomplished man. He is CEO of Sperry Commercial and has been highly recognized and as an influential leader within the Southern California and national commercial real estate industry for more than 35 years. To date, Rand Commercial and Sperry Equities have acquired more than 100 commercial, industrial, and office properties exceeding $1.5 billion worth of value and with over 10 million square feet under management and $6 million square feet owned. Yeah. Rand is extremely active in both church and the community on boards and running committees. He has been a member of numerous civic and religious boards and in Orange County for the last 20 years. So let's welcome Rand to the podcast. Rand, my buddy, what's up?
Hey, Charlie. Good to see you.
Nice to have you here on the next chapter with Charlie. Rand, you know, as I went through my notes, I think you are my first multimillionaire on the show. But you know what's really so cool is that you don't act like a rich guy. After spending more than a week with you, I met a gracious, humble, and endearing individual. Tell me, how do you prevent that pride and privilege that many of with money possess?
Well, you know, I didn't grow up privileged. I grew up kind of an average lifestyle here in Southern California. And so I kind of kept those roots. I understand not everyone could be so lucky and to get to, you know, the levels of wealth that many people here in Orange County have. And so I'm very grateful. And, you know, I don't want to insult or hurt anyone's feelings and by being flashy or showy. And so I keep it at a level that I'm used to, which I've had since I was growing up, you know, just who I am. I don't try to be pretentious and someone I'm not.
Yeah, so. You're not at all. So you're raised in a middle class family.
Yes. Yeah.
How in the world did you find the acumen and the energy and all that it takes to be who you are today? Where did that come from?
Well, you know, just my surroundings. I mean, you do meet people when you're growing up that have been very successful. And I met a few in real estate, a few who owned businesses. I mean, even in our neighborhood, there was one gentleman who owned 17 fast food Mexican restaurants and another one who owned a motorcycle dealership and another one who had owned a meat packing plant. So, you know, we had a lot of entrepreneurs in our neighborhood. So maybe we were a little more than middle class. But, and even my dad, he had a car wash business. And so, you know, there were a lot of entrepreneurs, and some you could see were stepping up to the next level and were very successful. And I would kind of see, well, what did they do to get to where they got to? And I guess I need to do the same thing. And of course, education for starters, and working hard and being diligent and being focused and being goal oriented. Those are all things that I learned as I was growing up.
You seem to be an industrious learner.
Yeah.
That you are always trying to learn and then put it to use.
Yeah.
Is that what you found in your family? Did your family inculcate that in your life?
Yeah, they did. And my dad was an avid reader. You know, more basically what was in the news, things that were current, and studies and statistics and things like that. And he actually pushed me into the real estate business in terms of thinking that either be an attorney, son, or get into commercial real estate. I don't know why those two things, but those were the choices that I seemed to have, and they weren't forced upon me. But we had a friend who owned several apartment buildings, and I could see they didn't have to stress out like the average neighborhood family, because they had passive income coming in. So he taught me that, you know, if you can create passive income in your life, then you never have to depend on anybody or anything for your next meal. So that's what got me into investing in real estate. And as I became a believer, as I've mentioned to you before, Charlie, I bought my first fourplex when I was 20 years old. And sure enough, the proof of the pudding of that was that I invested $10,000 or $11,000, which I saved up since I was a little kid to not 20 years old. And it turned out I was cash flowing a couple hundred bucks a month. And then I sold it a year and a half later for about a $15,000 profit. Now, keep in mind, I put like 11 grand down.
And this is what year?
1974.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I was making 24% on my money. You know, 200 bucks a month times 12 is $2,400, over 10,000, let's say. It's 24%. And then the kicker was that I made $15,000 on the $11,000 investment when I sold it. So I decided.
So you were hooked.
Yeah, my dad was right. This is the business for me.
That's great. That's so impressive. Now, in addition to your business, you put an extreme amount of time in philanthropy. And you're very involved in the reconstruction of the old Crystal Cathedral, with Schuller,
yes,
and turning that into what I'm calling perhaps the grandest Catholic cathedral, perhaps in the entire United States. Tell me, what role do you play in that enterprise?
Well, I actually chair the LLC that owns the real estate. Of course, the bishop is on the board, but he's a board member. And of course, we serve at the pleasure of the bishop, but I'm basically head that LLC. So I sign all the documents relating to that property and a couple other properties that go along with it. And it's kind of funny that you mentioned that we want to be the premier cathedral in the United States, because kind of jokingly, our goal is to be able to call this the Vatican of the West.
Vatican West.
So, because of the property, you know, it's on 38 acres. There's six buildings. We refurbished five of them. We're now on to the actual cathedral. It's been gutted. We're in the process of starting to rebuild the inside. And most people don't know there's an undercroft as well that is the same size as the ground floor. So we're working on the undercroft as well. I guess you'd call it a basement. And
that's where the camels used to sneak up during
yes,
the pageants.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's right. So there's a lot of work involved in just the design. And now we finally signed the contract. We're about 5 or 6 months into it. And our plan is to be done in February of 2019. The construction will be done. And then we need 5 months to put the organ in, which I believe is the fourth largest organ in the world.
5 months to put the organ in?
Yes.
Holy cow.
A lot of it has to do with the tuning, and they have to lay everything down and they can't be disturbed. So a lot of it isn't, I mean, we could probably put the organ in a week, but it wouldn't work. It wouldn't work properly. It wouldn't be tuned. So, and that was part of the agreement with Rafati, the people that built it way back when, to make sure that it is a pearl when you're using it. So it was a requirement that we agree to give them 5 months to install it. So
your life, it sounds like you spent as much time in serving the community, serving the poor as you do in your job.
Yes.
So let's move on to Uganda. Okay. Here you go to Uganda, and this was not, as I said, this was not an easy trip.
No.
This is quite a grueling trip. What in the world moved you to participate in such a meaningful expedition?
Well, you know, Nick Jordan, the executive director, introduced me to the Wells of Life, I'd say 4 or 5 years ago. He came to a group that I was involved in called Legatus. Legatus is a Catholic CEO group, national, formed by Tom Monahan, who started Domino's Pizza. And it's kind of designed after YPO. So once a month we get together and we have speakers, and he was a speaker. And of course, you know, Nick, he did an amazing job explaining what he was doing. And then somebody obviously said, well, you need to contact Rand Sperry. So then we had a couple of lunches, and you know, I just was so busy at that time. The recession was in full swing, and I was actually probably working 90% of my time in dealing with business issues. And so as my time freed up, the economy recovered and things got better, then I got more involved in talking to Nick about it, and did a well about 2 years ago, my first well. And then he would send stuff every month about what's going on with all these wells that he's building and the success he's having. And what really got to me was seeing the pictures with the children and how grateful they were for what was happening, and the fact that they could have clean water. And, you know, obviously clean water is something that should be available to everyone on this planet, first and foremost. And so I can certainly buy into the mission pretty easily. And we're helping, as you mentioned in the beginning of the broadcast here, that, you know, you've saved 50,000 lives, and basically about 15% of the 1,000 people that are served by the well will die if this well isn't bore. So it's a real type of thing that you see your money at work almost immediately. You know, you have $6,000 for a well, and it serves over 1,000 people. And so I kind of want to do more of these, because it's like, it's a lot of cluck for your buck.
Yeah, it really is. And because, you know, most wells cost $12,000, $18,000, and Wells of Life is able to do it for six.
Yeah, that's amazing in and of itself.
And provide for so many people. And as you said, the thing that really does draw you is the children, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And, you know, I saw the pictures, but I wanted to see it for myself. And I said, if I'm really going to invest more money financially in this, I need to go. And so Nick arranged a trip last October, and I had a daughter who was having a baby right like that week, so I couldn't go. And I said, I'll go on the next one, which was the one we just went on. And it was very nice to be able to make it the beginning of March instead of the end of March, because I have another daughter having a baby the end of March. So,
oh my goodness.
Any day now, actually.
Oh my goodness, you're baby full.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of daughters, and speaking of women that love children, you took your daughter Kelly.
Yes.
Who actually has fame of her own. She's a model and fiance to an up and coming actor named Miles Teller, who's in that fabulous film Whiplash that I saw 3 times at the theater.
All right, yeah.
I love the movie so much. What do you think influenced Kelly to attend this trip? I mean, the month before, she was walking the red carpet at the Academy Awards, and then she turns up living in this month in a room with a bed surrounded by mosquito nets and kind of a shower.
Yeah.
What do you think influenced her to go?
Well, first off, it wasn't a month before. It was Sunday, and I think we left on Tuesday, right?
Yes.
It was like literally like a couple days later from the red carpet to Uganda. So, you know, we have traveled. One of the things I decided to do with some of the money that I made is not invest all of it, but invest a lot of it as well in my family and my children. And so they've been in 55 plus countries and 32 states. And we've been to a lot of third world countries, not like Uganda. That's probably the most extreme. But typically, even when we did, we were driving through and heading to the nicest hotel in the area. We weren't doing what we did on this last trip. But while we would be touring, you know, these young children would come up. And I remember Kelly really grabbing these little babies, and, you know, some of them, honestly, they hadn't had their diapers changed or their clothes changed in a long time. They were really dirty, but she didn't care. She'd grab them and hold them and get real excited and feel so sorry for these children, because they didn't have anything like what she grew up with. And so I knew it was somewhat near and dear to her heart. And so when I told her I was going, she said, "I'm in. And, you know, can you do it after the Oscars?" And so Nick arranged that, and off we went. So I knew she'd like it and she'd get a lot out of it. But as you know, it was even more than
I want to talk about that, because there was an event that occurred that was a special event for the Sperry family.
Yeah,
I'd like you to tell me that story. That's a great story.
Well, so Miles and Kelly got engaged in Africa. On a safari last year, August 20th of last year. And so Africa held a special place in her heart. And it dawned on me, and actually Nick and I were talking about who to dedicate this well to, because, as you know, when you do purchase a well, you get the opportunity to dedicate it to somebody.
And there's a plaque put at the bottom of the well that
a beautiful
everyone
plaque.
Can read. Yes.
Yeah. So every day those families that get water from that well see that plaque as well. And so it's, he said, "Well, why don't you dedicate that to Miles and Kelly as an engagement gift?" And I thought, you know, gosh, they got engaged in August and we haven't gotten them a gift at all for their engagement. And it's like, what would you get them anyway? I've been to their home, of course, and it's fully furnished and it's absolutely beautiful. And there's like, I don't know what they would need. So this well was just right up both their alleys. I mean, Miles as well was very excited to hear about it. And it totally caught Kelly off guard, because it was a secret.
Except it was a secret to Kelly, but not for the rest of us.
Right, right.
There were a dozen of us that couldn't wait to see what happened.
Yes. And then, so as you drive up to this school, it's a school with about 500 children, and the well is like right below the school, but there's this long road that goes up to the school, and it was lined with the 500 children, as you know, screaming and yelling and welcoming all of us to their school. And that in and of itself was, I think, pretty emotional, both for myself and Kelly, and I think all of us. I mean, yes. I was just blown away just by that.
Yes.
And then we got there, and they did a presentation to us, a skit, I think, and a poem.
It was a play that they wrote for Kelly.
For Kelly,
they wrote this, and the song that they sung, they wrote for Kelly.
Yeah.
And she never even got from the players the song that it was about her.
Yeah.
And it's
she was oblivious, wasn't she?
Well, but she had a child in her arms.
Yeah, she immediately
always had a child. She had a sitting with a child.
Yeah. Immediately grabbed that child and was holding it. And you could just see how special this is to her, this type of charity. And so she didn't get it until we walked down to the well. And you guys even had a cover over the plaque so we can unveil it. And then, of course, she started crying and I started crying. And she saw that it was dedicated to her and Miles upon their engagement and that they may have a wonderful life together.
Yeah,
so
it was wonderful. She said it was the most exciting surprise of her life.
She did say that. She did say that. It, like, probably the best gift she's ever gotten. And believe me, she's gotten some nice gifts. So
yeah.
She was, and I just, it's just so wonderful. It's what a great kickoff to the beginning of their engagement.
Well, I've got several more questions to ask of you, but before we do that, I think it's time we take a brief break.
All right.
So we'll be back in just a few seconds here. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I have my very special guest, Rand Sperry, who is CEO of Sperry Commercial, and he and I just returned from Uganda, and both of us had life-changing experiences. Would you not say, Rand, that was a life-changing experience?
Yeah, it was beyond my expectations of what I was going to find in Uganda. Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, we've only been back 4 or 5 days, but I just appreciate and am grateful for everything I have after visiting there. And I think we all should be that way. We just don't realize in this country, the poorest of this poor in this country don't have, they certainly have a better life than a lot of these people in Uganda. And so, I'm very grateful for what I have.
You know, my family is involved like yours in philanthropy and charity, and this trip to Uganda said, I don't give enough. I'm actually saving too much for myself, and I need to give to other people and leave it to trust God that He's going to take care of me as I get older.
Yeah.
And give more money to these people that I can actually save lives, change lives. You know, one of the beautiful things that we do is that the women do most of the work. The women and the young girls do most of the work. It's just the way many third world societies are built, that the men kind of sit around and play cards. And
that's what we saw.
Do whatever they do. But you have these young girls carrying, we call them jerry cans, which are 5 gallon cans of water, 5 gallon jugs of water, weighing about 45 pounds. And they can carry them for miles. And when we put a well near where they live, they can now actually attend school.
Yeah.
Which is really wonderful that these girls can't attend school because they're busy what they call fetching water, and busy fetching dirty water. If our listeners were to see a photograph, well, they can see it on my blog, on my website. I have a photograph of the dirty water, which is disgusting, that they drink. And they no longer have to go to these places. They get clean water, they can go to school, and they can get educated. It's
a huge win, isn't it? Especially for the investment of $6,000 for a well, that 100% of that money goes directly for that well. And
So
you immediately see the benefit. I mean, the minute that well starts pouring out water, you're saving lives. Because what they do with that muddy water, they take it home and boil it. But that doesn't get all the imperfections out, obviously.
No.
And that's how they end up getting very sick and end up dying.
Yeah, so as you said, you know, that 100% of the money goes to the donation, but also each well will provide really a minimum of 1,000 people with clean drinking water.
Right. And what I saw there, too, that I was very impressed with is that Wells of Life, just pat you on the back, you and the team, is very organized, and you've got a strategic plan, a 5 and 10 year plan, and actually a 20 year plan to solve this problem in Uganda. And so it's not like the money's going into a bottomless pit. The money is, you're strategically opening these wells and your ability to service them. And of course, when we were there, we were involved in the purchase of like a corporate site, a 2-acre site that we're going to build offices and a training facility and a warehouse to store spare parts and to service these wells. And you could see that it's all happening. And so I was very impressed. And so, like you said, you know, it's like, where can I get more money to help do this?
You know what pronoun I love that you used? What? You didn't use you guys. You said we.
We.
I love that we've hooked you in. Well, we've hooked you in so deeply that you are now a member of our advisory board, and I personally am going to take advantage of you and your intelligence and your leadership acumen to help us going in the right direction. I think you're going to play a big role with Wells of Life.
Well,
and I'm really excited about that.
Happy to do what I can. And as you, I don't know if you mentioned yet that Kelly and Miles will be ambassadors, right? I think.
Did Miles accept?
Well, I don't know. I actually will see him on Friday, so to confirm that. But Kelly said, don't worry about him. Like, you know, she speaks for him when it comes to this stuff. So we'll see.
Yes, that's right.
They're not married yet, so we'll
see.
She
is an ambassador, so we've got the Sperry family totally represented.
Yes,
that's great. Really wonderful. You know, you've talked about a lot of things that you learned or experienced or felt on the trip. After spending, what were you there, 5 days?
Yeah.
So you're there 5 days. After 5 days living in, you know, we lived in poverty ourselves and seeing real poverty and found out that we were living pretty well.
Yeah.
What did you bring away that you would like to tell our listeners that you think is important?
Well, like I said a little earlier, I brought away the fact that these people need our help. They really do, and we owe it to them to do what we can to improve their life situation. And we were really living among them, and of course a rose among thorns in that particular area. But you know, as you drive down the road and you see, I did see some despair on many a middle-aged woman's face,
right.
And that really bothered me a lot. The kids, they were awesome. Most of them, I'd say 98% of them were really had a great attitude about life and smiled and certainly extremely grateful and loved talking to us and wanted to touch us and hold our hand and thank us. And so the spirit is so strong and alive in Uganda, even despite their circumstances. So I think the thing is when we complain about, you know, it's a little too hot in the house or too cold or whatever, you know, complain about these minor things, my mind will race back to what I experienced on this trip and go, no, this is nothing. And, you know, just suck it up. It's nothing compared to what they're going through there. But, and despite that, their attitude and probably, I mean, how many of those kids are on pills of some sort? I forget what the, you know, there's a joke about how many children are on antidepressants in our society. And you look at those kids and they're all very spirited and excited about life. And they have absolutely nothing compared to what we have.
They have nothing, yes.
The contrast is amazing. And yet how positive they are about life.
We give them a soccer ball. And that's like one of our teenagers giving them a Mercedes Benz.
Yeah.
They think that much of a soccer ball that they have something to play with that is so enjoyable.
And they're so excited. I mean, they're so excited about that. And that's what made me feel good about Kelly because, you know, frankly, on her 16th birthday, she got a Range Rover. Okay. And she was pretty excited about that. It was a sport and she wanted that. And, you know, by that time, every kid had gotten a pretty cool car on their birthday and they behaved. So I felt more positive. You know, I felt very positive about this, that you still got to be grateful for what you have. And so when she said that this is the best gift I've ever received, and I'm thinking about some of the things she's received, I realized that I've raised some great kids that kind of get it, primarily because they have gone beyond the orange curtain, so to speak, here in Orange County. And that's what I got out of the trip. It just reinforced what I felt and what I've known all these years. But living it there, you really could see that you could have a lot less and still be really happy. I guess that's, you know, if you want to drill it down to the basics. But yet, you know, it's just not fair that they sit there drinking boiled, dirty water. It just shocks me. And I'm glad to see one of the great things that I did see there was the meeting with the prime minister. He was so supportive of helping us, that got me really excited, because it's very important that the government's behind you to do these things.
And they're very strongly behind us.
Yes. I mean, I don't know about, you know, when you get to the top level, the president of the country or whatever. I mean, oftentimes these rulers want to keep the people down. And, you know, you can see that locally, the government officials don't want to do that. They want to try to improve the quality of life of their people. So that was extremely encouraging.
Well, you know, the Prime Minister, Charles Peter Mayiga, is the second most powerful person in the kingdom. He is, yeah. he's called the Tikikoro, which means he's the speaker for the president.
Wow.
That he does represent the president.
Wow.
And hopefully the president, you know, we haven't met him, so we don't know. But hopefully the president's in the same place. Now, you were talking, and our time is winding up now, but there's something that really interests me. And I noticed one thing I was really impressed with on this trip is the relationship between you and Kelly. You had as close of a father-daughter relationship as I've ever seen. She just has so much respect for you. And usually people of wealth do not respect their parents. They're not to this level. She loves you to death, respects you, and she accredits you with so much of who she is as a truly value-driven young woman. What did you and your wife, Rosemary, what did you do that helped raise children like that? How could we help my listeners in understanding parenting that raises children like that?
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of it had to do with just paying attention to them and making them really the center of your life. I mean, I spent every weekend and evenings when I got home with the kids. I didn't golf until just maybe 5 or 10 years ago. And they were the focus of our lives. They really were. And we spent all our time with them, and we showed them that they were the number one priority in our life, going to all their events. And, you know, I was one of a few dads, a lot more certainly than I was growing up, would show up for a lot of their sporting events and plays and anything they were involved in. And it really was a priority. And also, I think, really treating them as an adult, even as a child, because one thing I realized, even when I was dealing with a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old, is that someday they will be an adult. And if I don't treat them like an adult in terms of respecting them when they're little, I won't get that respect back when they're older. And so I really, you know, always treated my kids, when I say like an adult, meaning that, you know, I wouldn't slap you around if you did something wrong, would I? I mean, you're an adult, and I didn't do that with them. You know, I taught them and talked to them and reasoned with them and never embarrassed them or tried to disrespect them growing up, because I knew that someday that would come back to bite me in the butt if I did that. And you want to sometimes, but I just realized that was just not the way to raise the kids.
That's amazing. So, I know.
And they're all like this, by the way. They're all like that.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, and you've got 5, is that right?
6.
6.
Yeah.
That's right. So you have a basketball team with a bench support.
Yeah.
You know, I love to tell the story of my son when he would do something wrong, you know, 12 years or older, and, you know, because I wasn't really into grounding and that sort of thing, but I would get angry and I'd say, "Son, you're grounded for a week." And so it would take 4, 5, 6 hours, and we'd be in the laundry room, and he was doing laundry young, and we'd be doing laundry, and I said, "Son, you ever going to do that again?" He says, "No way, Dad. There's no way. I just will not do it." And I say, "Forget about the grounding." So he used to just laugh at me whenever I would try to throw discipline out, because he knew I would change.
Yeah, well,
but that's because I trusted him.
Yeah,
and I knew he would do that.
And he's turned out to be a wonderful young man, from what I hear. So
thank you.
You know, that's the way you have to do it, and you know, it will reward you as you grow older. It's worth it.
Now let me ask you a final question, which Nick Jordan will definitely want to know. Now that you've accepted the role of an advisory board member, how do you perceive your role increasing with the organization? What do you feel like you can bring to the table that the organization needs?
Well, interestingly enough, I think I'll find out as we go. You know, I don't know exactly what I could bring to the table, but I think my goal is to perhaps be able to help you zig when you're zagging. Basically, we're like, well, wait, you really shouldn't go that direction. Let's think about what if we went this direction. So minor things, hopefully they're just like minor points that help keep, like in an airplane, you know, if you just are off course by a few degrees, you end up in a different country, right, after a while. So hopefully I can help there. That's really what it is. I'm involved in so many charities, as I've talked to you about, that I can never be as involved as you are in Wells of Life, but hopefully there are certain nuances that I could bring to the table. I'm not sure what they are at the moment, but
it's kind of like the way you run your business now, isn't it?
It is. That is how I run
that you
business.
You have organizational leaders, and you're just helping them zig when they're zagging.
That is actually how I've started a company called Sperry Van Ness in 1987, and in 2000 we expanded it, and today it's in the top 10 commercial real estate brokerage companies in the country, with 200 offices and a couple thousand investment brokers. And as we grew that, you know, you just get talented people that probably know more than I do about the specific job they're doing, obviously. And you just kind of, when they're zagging, you get them back to zig or vice versa. And it works. And I think that's, you know, that's what a leader does.
Well, Rand, you are a very special man, and I think you've done a heck of a job, and Wells of Life is just so fortunate to have you as a member of our board, as a supporter, and I want to thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you, because I'm very impressed with the team that I saw on that trip. You guys are incredible.
Oh,
it was a great trip. Every day was more memorable than the next.
I know. It was a week of memories.
And it was unexpected. I thought, you know, because the first day was the surprise of the well. I go, well, this is the high. We've already hit the highlight of the trip. No, we didn't. Every day there was something amazing happening.
So. It was. Rand, I want to thank you so much for spending time with me today. And I also want to thank our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And also, please be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. That's LIFE. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.
You've been listening to another episode of The Next Chapter with Charlie, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.